are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on this episode of the Elephant in the Room podcast is Sumita Ghosh, the founder and managing director of Rangasutra, a social enterprise which seeks to bring about inclusive growth in rural India by engaging both the community and the market. She has a master's degree in economics and another master's in conflict resolution. Sumita was a Fulbright scholar and also the recipient of the MacArthur Fellowship for Leadership, and is amongst the first batch of CII Aspen India Fellows. Hi, Sumita. Wonderful to have you as a guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Sudha, for having me. Happy to be here.
Brilliant. So let's get started. Tell us a bit about your childhood, education, and your journey so far.
So I grew up in Bombay and went to school and college there. And while growing up there, one of the good things that I experienced right from school was that there was this sense of you can do anything you want, because there are so many opportunities. There are so many role models of people that you can emulate, unlike a small place. So I was always interested in crafts. I learned from my mother to stitch clothes, because being a Bengali, every puja, we used to get 3 sets of clothes. My mother would stitch those clothes for me till I was about 15 years old. But when it came to deciding about college, I sort of chickened out from focusing on this, and I decided to go in to study science. But in college, a year of laboratories and chemicals just put me off totally. And I switched to the humanities, focusing on economics. But I must say, I wasn't clear about what to do, even at college. And then after I finished my last paper in economics, I came back home and I told my friend that I just cannot study anymore. I need to work. Of course, who's going to give work to an economics graduate? I mean, there are millions of economics graduates. But a friend of mine came across a post for a salesperson in a store called Artistic, and which made and sold the most beautiful products, mostly handcrafted products. And I applied there and I got a job. And for 2 years, it gave me an idea of the amazing craft heritage that we have. Whether it's in woodcraft, metalcraft, semi-precious stuff, and pitch-wise, there was a little workshop where some of these products were made, especially handbags. And I realized that the people who were making it were really not getting a good deal. They had the skills, but they obviously were living a hand-to-mouth existence. And of course, growing up in Bombay, you know how it is, Sudha. You've lived in Bombay, I think.
Yes.
You know, as an adult, you are very conscious of the inequalities in our society. So that stayed with me. Of course, I didn't know what to do with it, but I was conscious of it. It was in college where I met my future husband. He wanted to do something to bring about a change. And he opted for a subject called rural development, which was offered for the first time in Bombay University. And there were only 2 students who took it. So through him, I got to know a little bit of the challenges that rural India faces. And then, of course, I finished working in Artistic. Then I said, I must do a master's in economics.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed my master's in economics. And at that time, Sanjay, he was studying at the Institute of Rural Management in Anand. And after that, we decided to get married. And I must say that 70% of what attracted me to him was his unusual choice of career, of profession. So that started a new phase of my life.
It's so wonderful to hear about the journey. There's so many things that I identify with. Generally, also, most people don't know what they're going to do with their lives. When did you decide to become an entrepreneur and why did you start Rang Sutra?
So, as I said, I embarked on another journey and went and lived in rural Rajasthan for 10 years. And it was another country. And while there, it was very clear that the position of women, the status of women was very poor, that there was a lack of opportunity that women and girls and boys also had in terms of education and health. But they had this amazing craft skills and also knowledge of traditional agriculture, organic agriculture. So that always stayed in my head as a part of something to focus on and to bring to the world. Normally, people see rural Indians as backward and they need to be developed and they need to be empowered, but there's something that they could also give to us. So this stayed in my mind. And then I left Rajasthan. Sanjay and I both went to work in Assam, where we had a very bad experience. And basically, it was we got into confrontation with the Alpha. And they abducted Sanjoy and we had to leave the place, me and my children and my other colleagues. And it was obviously a turning point. And it made me question a lot of things because it made me question the model of rural development that we are following. Is that the way out or do we need to do something which is a little bit more owned by the people? You know, where we look at people not as beneficiaries of our projects, but whatever we want to do, we do it in a way which is co-owned and where there is active participation and ownership. So after this terrible period in my life, I got a chance to go to the United States on a Fulbright fellowship, doing a master's in conflict transformation. And it was a time which really gave me an opportunity to step back. I was going back to college after like 20 years almost, you know. I just about turned 40 then. And so it was a great time. And I was actually writing a paper for this master's degree on organizations needed for the 21st century with a focus keeping conflict at the back and perspective. So one of the conflicts I decided to focus on was really the growing inequalities among Indians, especially in the light of opening up of our economy after 1991. People like me, us, who have had education, have had so many opportunities opened to us because of globalization. But the people I had worked with in rural India were struggling just to stay in that place, you know. So I felt that this was a potential for a source of conflict and what can we do? And so that's when I thought of the idea of Rang Sutra. The name hadn't come to my mind, but I thought of it as a space, a platform, if you call it, or a space in which we can get people from different parts of the spectrum. Like I chose craft. So people who make the craft, people who design them, people who sell them, the retailers. Why don't we get them all together and create a space where each one can see the importance of the other, understand each other, and use this space to create an organization, not just to sell products, but also to ensure sustainable livelihoods for rural artisans.
What a journey, what a journey. Talk to us about Rang Sutra's business model, because I don't think it's a model that people have everywhere. And I don't think there's so much of understanding on how valuable that model can be.
Yeah, so setting up Rang Sutra, we registered a company. By we, I mean the artisans I had worked with before and some team members, because we decided that it has to be for profit. So we registered a company, but that's easier said than done. After registering a company, we couldn't really raise the funds to run it because we didn't have a 3-year balance sheet. None of us had collateral. So what I did was go back to all the artisans I had worked with in my life in Rajasthan, ask them if they were willing to chip in money. And I was very concerned that they would say no, but they actually bought the idea. And 1,000 of them put in 1,000 rupees each. 80% of them were women. That's 800. And we got 10 lakhs, which was our first equity. So I would say real ownership of all the stakeholders is something which is the bedrock of our model. With that kind of a mindset, then each one of us will do our best, whether it's the designer creating the product, whether it's the artisan doing the embroidery, because she knows if she doesn't do it well, it will not sell. So that's one main thing, the ownership. The second thing that I would say is very important is that earlier, all these artisans were working from home. Home-based workers for various reasons. It's simpler for women, especially to work from home. There were no public places in villages in which they could call an office. But we decided after a while, and this was when we had started our partnership with IKEA actually, that we should get them to come to centers and work together so that they can learn and grow together. At Rang Sutra, we believe in co-ownership, co-creation. We create the new designs with our designers and artisans work together, of course, with the market in mind. We get the orders. We buy the raw materials so that the quality of the raw materials is good. We help with production planning. Each village has someone called a craft manager whom we've trained. And she knows the craft, but she also shows leadership quality. And so she sort of supervises the rest. And we take the product right up to market.
That's really, really awesome. And this is like less than 10 pounds. And at the same time, you've created a whole new generation of women who own, who are a part of a sustainable business. That's really wonderful to hear. So Rang Sutra has had great market linkages, and you have a partnership with Fab India, very well-known retail store that is known for working with artisans. Tell us the story behind the partnership.
So actually, I knew Fab India and the owner of Fab India, William Bissell, right from my Rajasthan days, when we helped Fab India to set up a school for their artisans in another part of Rajasthan. And then subsequently, because at Urmul, we were working in Rajasthan, we were working with weavers. So we had some experience of supplying to Fab India, but it was very shaky. I mean, we'd get one order in the next 2 years. So when we were starting Rang Sutra, William Bissell was one of the people that I was talking with right from the beginning. And not only are they our retail partner, they have also invested in the company so that we can have the resources we need to grow. And with Fab India, again, it's a partnership. It's not just a transaction of a supplier vendor, but it's a partnership where we have learned a lot from things like standardization of products. We learned about running a business, actually. How do we ensure that we have enough raw material, enough inventory, not too much, not too little, and the basics of making a profit and loss statement every month. How to run a successful enterprise at a village level, district level.
So they've been a good partner and helped you move along the way and grow. How did the partnership with IKEA come about? I saw the film the other day and I loved the film and the lyrics of the song the women were singing. Can you tell us about the meaning of the words?
So the IKEA partnership came about 6 years after we started Rang Sutra, where I was a little restless. I have this tendency to be restless every 5 years. So I was a bit restless that, you know, what else is there? Because we can't just be making shirts and kurtas. So in that search, I came across a project which was funded by the IKEA Foundation on women's economic empowerment in Eastern UP. And it was in Varanasi, a city which I had never been to but had heard a lot. It's supposedly the oldest living city in the world. And so I was drawn to Varanasi. I went there, we got the project, and that's how we started. And it was a development project in the sense that we actually helped train the women to learn the craft, to manage their work. And then when the project got over after 2 years, I told my IKEA colleagues that, look, you can't let us go now. You're the biggest retailer in the world. Give us a chance. And I must say they were very open to it. And they started a new project. It was a project then. Now it's part of mainstream business. It was to work with what they call next generation social entrepreneurs. So business, not just for profit, but for empowerment of the people who are engaged in it. And that partnership, again, has taught us so much. We couldn't believe that from a small place like Mirzapur or Gyanpur in Eastern UP, that you could make products to sell globally. And that gave us a lot of confidence. IKEA has been amazing. They have helped us, literally the ABC of export business and making textiles for the world. We learned from them, and touch wood, the partnership grows from strength to strength.
This is such a heartwarming story to hear that you find the right partners to support you, which I'd love to know a bit more about that film.
Yeah, so it's a group of women who are singing this song, which says that I swear by the waves of the sea that we will change the warp and the weft of society. And this change can only happen if it begins with you. You have to be the change you want to see in the world, and the world will change accordingly. It's a song actually written by a lady called Kamala Bhaseen. She is someone I've learned so much from in Jagori. So in my early days, I went to workshops there and I learned the song there.
Kamala Bhaseen is awesome. I interviewed her for The Elephant in the Room. She's amazing and the words are fantastic. So while it's great that you sell your products to some leading retailers and great brands, but you've not diversified as much because you've had great partners, does this constitute a risk? And are you planning to diversify your products with your partners? And you spoke about exporting. You clearly have an understanding of what the market needs are, what consumers want. So how are you gearing up for that next stage? Because that is the next stage.
You're absolutely right. It is a risk being so dependent on two large buyers. So what we have done is we have started diversification. And from next month, actually, we'll be working in a bamboo cluster in Jharkhand. So, wow. You know, natural fibers is the next vertical we'll get on to. And definitely looking for other global buyers who have the similar kind of orientation like Fab India and IKEA have, in the sense that it's not just about the product, but also the people who make the product. And so we are trying hard to forge these new partnerships. So if anyone is listening to the podcast and is interested in partnering with us, please do so. We are very keen to partner with other global retailers.
That's brilliant. What has been the impact of COVID on the business and artisans since their products are categorized as non-essential? Do you believe that they've fallen through the gaps in terms of support from the government? What has been Rang Sutra's experience and the broader experience of stories you may have heard during this time?
Yes, it actually has been very sad. And, you know, at Rang Sutra, again, we are fortunate to have good partners who did not cancel orders, who also gave us relief for the artisans and we chipped up with whatever little we had. The government, I think they just were not prepared and didn't know what to do. I think they have tried in their own ways by initially giving orders to small self-help groups of women to make masks, for example, because everybody needs masks. But I think in terms of a longer strategy, I don't think very much has been done. But what is good is that there are many organizations which have got together and are helping artisans in different ways by selling their products on their platforms, online platforms, by helping them to digitally photograph the products, helping them with marketing them. So I think it's been more the community of crafts organizations which have supported the artisans.
I read that the All India Handloom Board and All India Handicrafts Board were abolished last year. Are they essential for creating favorable ecosystem for artisans to flourish? And what is the potential impact, especially during this time, because there is no overarching body that looks after the well-being or the welfare of artisans?
Yeah, it's sad, actually. It's really sad that they were abolished. Maybe they needed a change. They needed to be transformed in the way that they were operating, but definitely one needs a body to support the artisans, because otherwise, you know, they're so cut off from everything, not just financial resources, but market knowledge, information. So definitely it's sad that they had to stop that. Hopefully there'll be something new in place. I know that artisans themselves are trying to get together, and we're all trying to get together to form our own body. But let's see how that goes.
What have you heard from your female artisans talking about what their experience has been in the past year and a half?
So right in the beginning, it was quite tough, because when the first lockdown happened, they didn't have access to basic stuff like ration that they needed to buy. It was difficult. They hadn't stocked up so much, and the far-flung villages were cut off. The only good thing is, in most of these villages, they grow their essentials, including vegetables and, of course, grains. But it was very difficult. But one thing I can say is that compared to the workers who were working in factories in the big cities, who had nothing left and who had to walk back to their homes, our artisans, because they were based in their homes and they had other things to fall back on, like, for example, farming or cattle, you know, some of them have cattle, so milk. So they had these other things to fall back on. So that's the beauty of rural economy, that not everyone is dependent on just one occupation.
A good way to defray the risk. As a social entrepreneur, what are the non-negotiables for you at Rang Sutra?
Most important thing is that I would sum it up in a line where one of our guiding values, respect for the customer, respect for the producer, and respect for each other. By respect for the producer, what is non-negotiable is that they have to be paid a fair price. B, in case they need to be skilled, we need to provide that opportunity, because they've not had opportunities before. Respect for the customer, for us, it means that if you have promised a certain quality and a certain delivery time, you have to stick by it. So that's important. And of course, respect for each other. So this is like non-negotiable. Inclusiveness, that we try and include the most marginalized. So most of the artisans we work with traditionally come from what is called scheduled caste, or, you know, backward castes, and they're in such a situation because they've not really had the opportunity to skill themselves. We work hard to ensure that they get the necessary skills and resources to grow. So that commitment to artisans, the compassion, is a non-negotiable.
Wonderful. We've come to the last question now. What is your ambition for Rang Sutra? What would be the dream?
So the dream is to build it into a global brand, and a brand that stands not just for beautiful handcrafted products, because yes, Indian crafts are known for that, but to show that there is a way of doing business in which one can be profitable, sustainable, thriving. At the same time, ensure that the artisans, the ones who make the products, they benefit equally, if not more, that all profits are shared with them. And thirdly, most important, is that through our work, we do not harm the environment. And in that sense, working with handcrafts is very low energy. We don't use much electricity in our weaving, no electricity, in fact. And what we have tried to do is, now wherever we do need, in some cases, power, we are tapping into solar power. So yes, to show the world that there is a way of doing business which is good for all.
What a wonderful ambition, aspiration it is. And I can see that it's going to happen very soon for Rang Sutra and for all the artisans and for all the hard work that you're all putting in. Thank you so much, Sumita, for sharing your thoughts, your insights, your experiences, and being here today.
Thank you, Sudha. Wonderful to be here and talking to you.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.